Hello, hello, and welcome to the final look at O Mercy. We've been revisiting O Mercy over the last few episodes, so if you're joining me for the first time in a while, go back and listen to the first part of these episodes and work your way through them chronologically, because I think it does make a difference. The stuff we discuss in later episodes refers back to some stuff in earlier episodes, so go back and listen to the earlier parts of O Mercy Revisited if you haven't done so already. And as I say, this is the final look at that album. It's been nice going back to take it all in once again, actually, because I think it's just such an incredible record. And I'm sure people have fed up with me saying, but I think it's one of Dylan's best. And I also think it's still, even these days, underrated, even though you see loads of Dylan fans talking about how great it is on regular occasions online. I still think it's a little bit underrated, maybe because it didn't really have a big breakout song like some Dylan albums. I mean, most of the time seems to get a lot of recognition, doesn't it? Maybe Man in the Long Black Coat as well. But it didn't have a kind of Make You Feel My Love that was turned into like a big hit, even though if it wasn't necessarily from Dylan himself. But yeah, I think it's still an amazing record, O Mercy, and I hope you've been enjoying revisiting it with me too. If you want to send a little tip, then you can do that. You can buy me a coffee in the episode's description. Thank you again if you've done that over the last couple of weeks, more than appreciated. And also, if you haven't done so yet and you have been listening to this podcast for a while, if you could leave us a review wherever you listen, and a rating, that really does help out. We're slaves to the algorithm these days. Oh God, I wish we weren't. But yeah, if you can leave a review or a rating, it really does help. Even if you are a long-term listener, it still helps, even though the podcast has been kind of finished for quite a while. So go and do that, please, when you get a spare moment. And let's, for the final time, revisit 1989's O Mercy. So we've come to the end of the road, not only for O Mercy, but for this extra podcast. Fittingly, O Mercy's ending is an illustration of something we've seen time and time again on this podcast: Dylan's flair for an ending. Shooting Star, the album's final track, is as good an ending to a record as Buckets of Rain is to Blood on the Tracks, or even Restless Farewell is to The Times They Are a-Changing. It, like those other two songs, beautifully encapsulates what the entire album has been about, but moves the narrative on to some sort of conclusion. In the song, we have yet more questioning, like we've had all over this LP, but it seems to be from a place of enlightenment, or at least a more settled place. Gone is that angsty questioning of what good am I, or the inability of acceptance on most of the time. Here on Shooting Star, our narrator is much more subjective. They're much more level-headed about their situation. In the second verse, Dylan sings, "Seen a shooting star tonight, and I thought of me. If I was still the same, if I ever became what you wanted me to be, did I miss the mark, overstep the line that only you could see? Seen a shooting star tonight, and I thought of me." I love the lyrics in this song. They are simple and effective. They're almost perfect in their simplicity. Dylan wrote the song in New Orleans. At least, that's where it started. He writes in Chronicles saying, "Once I rode a bike over to the Spanish Plaza and parked it right at the foot of Canal Street. Nearby, a paddle wheeler was moored on the river. The beat of a Cajun band on the boat sounded almost hysterical. Under the southernmost magnolia, I started feeling something about a song called Shooting Star. A song that I hadn't written yet. I could vaguely hear it in my mind, the kind of song you hear when you're wide awake in your head and see and feel things, but all the rest of you is asleep. I didn't want to forget this. Before I left town, I wanted to write it and record it." Dylan seems to continue with this early idea on a break during the album's recording, where he and his wife take a little trip. Later, he talks of the song appearing more fully. He says, "The song came to me complete, full in the eyes, like I'd been travelling on the garden pathway of the sun and just found it. It was illuminated. I'd seen a shooting star from the backyard of our house, or maybe it was a meteorite." Just like we saw on Chimes of Freedom and a whole host of other songs in Dylan's back catalogue, the act of seeing something from nature, such as a shooting star, seems to intersect with his life. It romanticises whatever moment he was experiencing. This is a song of moving on, in a way, almost like a continuation of the searching found in the song Most of the Time. But here it seems a little further down the line. He sings in the final verse some words that suggest our narrator is ready to move down the road. The words are, "Seen a shooting star tonight, slip away. Tomorrow will be another day. Guess it's too late to say the things to you you needed to hear me say. Seen a shooting star tonight, slip away." The scene, for once, appears to be over. There's an acceptance to this song that really isn't present in too many other places on Oh Mercy. It's a sort of confessional, guess it's too late finality, a feeling that sometimes things don't work out, and when that happens, you have to move on. The bridge of the song dances with some biblical themes, as Bob once again speaks of a broken world. But if you notice, we never get too far away from that feeling of finality. He sings, "Listen to the engine, listen to the bell as the last fire truck from hell goes rolling by. Know the use of last there. All good people are praying. It's the last temptation, the last account, last time you might hear the Sermon on the Mount. Last radio is playing." Note once again, yet more lasts. As for the recording of this song, well, that takes place on another sweaty New Orleans night. Dylan details this in Chronicles. He talks of being in a room where there's no air conditioning and grinding out the track. Once again, like he stated before, it was raining outside. Whether this is actually true or not, who knows? Maybe he's just dressing it up, giving it a little bit of atmosphere, shall we say. Dylan seems to have mentioned this a few times with these tracks. It gives their creation a little more romance. He talks of microphones being hung in strange places as they record in their home-based studio. It doesn't seem to be the easiest process, but, you know, what is on this album? Dylan says many hundreds of miles of pain went into the song. He also talks of wanting to do a slightly different arrangement that never comes to fruition. He says, "I felt like I didn't write it so much as I inherited it. It would have been good to have a horn man or two on it, a throbbing hum that mingled into the music, but we had to cut it with what we had." He also says he had an idea of doing the song with Irma Thomas, which once again never happens. But what they are left with, despite Dylan's lingering disappointment, is a beautiful ballad. It teeters on the edge of a cheesy ballad, but it never dives right in. It's too sad to ever dive right in, I feel. Dylan's reverberated vocals are instantly recognisable. It's a final great performance in an album that is full of them. The guitars, as they are before, are shimmery in some cases, but the metallic dobro once again takes the crown. In fact, the one in the left ear throughout the song, possibly played by Lamoir and overdubbed at a later date, is almost as high in the mix as Dylan's vocals, and it never stops either. It's always delivering some little licks or quick chords. It also plays the song's riff. Oh Mercy is not really a riff-heavy album. It's not the type of album that would be a riff-heavy album. But there are some lurking there, if you know where to look. What Good Am I, for example, has a great one, and there's a great one here. It's beautiful in its symmetrical sound. It's played over some pretty simple chords of C, C, E, F, and then back to C, with a little divergence to A minor and some other chords for the song's bridge. Elsewhere, the omnichord is a nice addition to the song too. This is a plastic instrument that Bob has used a few times down the years. It makes the sound a little bit like this. Lamoir plays it during the session, and it adds that strange organ-like sound to the song that lingers in the background. It is important not because it's the star of the show, but because it, well, weirds up the track a little bit. That's kind of one of the secrets of Oh Mercy. It is just a little bit weird. And here the omnichord adds a supernatural air to it all without ever being too on the nose or falling into the world of novelty. In another life, Shooting Star would have been a good single, listening back now. In fact, I can hear it on the radio. It would have been the perfect song for a winter release, say. But, of course, that didn't happen. Not that we didn't get songs from the album, of course. Columbia did issue two singles. Most of the Time came in September 1989 with a slightly bizarrely re-recorded song for a music video, and in October came another, possibly the album's most single-worthy song. Everything is Broken. It did okay too. The song spent 8 weeks on the Billboard's mainstream rock chart, peaking at number 8 in that very chart, which, you know, isn't career-altering, but with Dylan's professional life not being the strongest at this point, it was a decent result for the album. This is a list song. Dylan lists things that are broken, resulting in, well, everything being broken, obviously. It's a rocky number which tells the same Oh Mercy story of decay and disappointment. He sings, broken bottles, broken plates, broken switches, broken gates, broken dishes, broken parts, streets are filled with broken hearts. It's a song he wrote and rewrote, apparently. It had the title Broken Days in the March when they were first working on the song, but by April, Bob had changed the title and also altered the song itself as well. Lanois talks of the process, saying, I sat next to him for 2 months while he wrote Oh Mercy, and it was extraordinary. Bob overwrites. He keeps chipping away at the verses. He has a place for all his favourite couplets, and those couplets can be interchangeable. I've seen the same lyrics show up on 2 or 3 different songs as he cuts and pastes them around. So it's not quite as sacred ground as you might think. This is interesting, and is possibly why Dylan's lyrics are often so hard to decode, as there's more than one idea in there, more than one point, more than one song, even. It could also link this song to Shooting Star. The appearance of a radio in Shooting Star might have come from this very song. As we've heard in the song's bridge, we hear of a radio playing, after some lines that paint a similar world and existence to the ones we find on Everything Is Broken. The reason for the radio linking these two songs is, well, a radio appears to be the genesis of Everything Is Broken. It comes from Dylan being on the beach in Coney Island. He sees an old radio half buried in the sand. He says, a beautiful General Electric self-charging, built like a battleship, and it was broken. I could have remembered that image at the top of the song, but I have seen a lot of other things broken too. Bowls, brass, lamps, vessels, jars, jugs, buildings, buses, sidewalks, trees, landscapes. All these things, when they're broken, they make you feel ill at ease. He says elsewhere, everything is broken or it looks that way, chipped, cracked, in need of repair. Things are broken, then rebroken, and made into something else, then broken again. It feels like at this point in his life, he's seeing a lot of broken things in the world for whatever reason. And as we've seen, that directly reflects into not only just Oh Mercy, but this entire era of his work. No other song has a starker reflection of this, though, than the words we hear here. Bob sings, broken lines, broken strings, broken threads, broken springs, broken idols, broken heads, people sleeping in broken beds. Ain't no use jiving, ain't no use joking, everything is broken. While it's not the most sonically diverse song on the record, it still has production that is layered, deep, and always willing to take a left turn. There's another riff here too. Told you there were quite a few. It's pretty simple once again, as we stay in the E and A chords, fiddling about with the lower notes for the most part. It's a really active sort of riff, something that complements the production around it. There's also a decent mini guitar solo to go with this, not to mention at one point there being around 5 different guitars contributing to the song. It really is quite a layered tune, considering on first listen it's just a straightforward rock and roll list song. Cyril Neville is back on the bongos on this tune, and he sets up camp in the right ear. Like on Political World, the performance gives the song additional energy. It's an instrument that seems to give whatever song it's added to pace. Its introduction right at the start of a song brings in the drums with a rush, acting as a sort of pace setter for the entire tune. The song's groove is established instantly, and for me, this is the sort of thing that separates Oh Mercy from other Dylan albums. Hell, from other albums full stop. Sure, the songs are good songs, they have to be, and the production has to be clever and innovative too, but the details are important as well. Having bongos on a song like this is a small addition, but a crucial one. It just makes the song a few percent better, and when you have 5 or 6 things like this on a song, before you know it, the tune has been vastly improved. Not to say that just adding stuff to a song improves it, but, you know, a sensible addition like this goes a long, long way. Especially when it's played by someone like Cyril Neville. And that's the other thing here. All these good ideas are carried out by brilliant performers. Going to New Orleans not only got Bob out of his usual studio setup, but brought him to some incredible players, people he perhaps wouldn't have worked with on other projects. We talk about Dylan going to Nashville and doing the same thing. Well, going to New Orleans was pretty important for him too. And while we're zooming out a little bit and concentrating on Dylan's career as a whole and where this album sits in his timeline, it's important to consider the song What Was It You Wanted? Suze Rotolo, Dylan's former New York 60s girlfriend, surprisingly mentions this song in her autobiography, despite the famous pair having been broken up for some time before this album was even conceived, and of course Dylan having two wives since then. Suze mentions the song as it resonates with her and her time with Bob. She says she first heard Willie Nelson performing it, and straight away she knew Dylan had written it. She says it's the essence of Bob. And as we've seen on this podcast in her book, Suze tells some sad stories about watching Dylan go from being her boyfriend to one of the most famous people in New York to then one of the most famous people in the country. It's like the line in Bob's 1973 song Nobody Except You. He says, "Everybody wants my attention. Everybody's got something to sell." This seems to be along the same lines as what's happening in What Was It You Wanted? On the song, Bob appears to address his status as an icon, not in the modern, slightly tongue-in-cheek sense, but in the age-old Dylan sense of everyone feeling like he has the answers to, well, you know, everything. He hints at this in Chronicles when talking about the song. He says, "If you've ever been the subject of curiosity, then you'll know what this song is about. It doesn't need much explanation." He also, like elsewhere, said he heard the lyric and melody together in his head whilst composing it. The sonics of the song are, once again for me, a masterclass. The groove of the bass makes the song have a knife-edge type feel about it. It's menacing in places, sludgy but strangely focused. It actually embodies our narrator's disposition, as Bob sings lines like, "We can start it all over, get it back on track. You got my attention, go ahead, speak." Bob's harmonica breaks are crucial to the song as well, as is the guitar from Mason Ruffner. The chords are minor for the most part, giving the song that needle, if you will, as Dylan plays a heavy A minor, moving to a couple of D minor shapes later. The lyrics and the sonics of this song really put me in the mind of the album's artwork. We spoke about this on the last episode. This song really seems to live in the same universe as that dancing couple in Yellow and Red. They feel like they're in some murky high-class club, and this song feels like it's there too. Our narrator is a person of note, and they're being accosted. We hear of songs mentioned in the lyrics, and kisses as well. But everything seems a little out of whack. It seems fuzzy, almost drunk round the edges. Especially when Dylan gets to the fifth verse and sings, "What was it you wanted? I ain't keeping score. Are you the same person that was here before? Is it something important? Maybe not. What was it you wanted? Tell me again. I forgot." With Oh Mercy, Dylan not only came back to success, or at least critical success, but the album sets him up for what we could truly see as his greatest era. Of course, from 1989 to 2022, he probably doesn't release albums as good as Highway 61 or Blonde on Blonde or Blood on the Tracks, but his consistency in this era is breathtaking. Now, there are some breaks in there. We know that. He's not releasing albums every 6 months. But what Oh Mercy's true legacy is that it brought Dylan back from the dead. It wasn't all plain sailing from here, no, but it was a sign to the outside world that Dylan could still cut it as a songwriter. He could be contemporary. He could do something new. He could surprise you still. He could morph and change into something unexpected. It also started his relationship with Daniel Lanois, who, despite only making two albums with Dylan, for me has a huge impact on this era of his career. As you know, they'd go on to make Time Out of Mind, an album that completes and solidifies much of the work that was started here. Without Time Out of Mind, we wouldn't get this stunning era of Dylan's work that leads right up to Rough and Rowdy Ways, an era we've been enjoying over the last couple of decades. And without Oh Mercy, I don't think we get Time Out of Mind. This LP is very much the root of all of that. But not only in terms of working practice and expectation, but literally in terms of sound. I don't think Bob would have made an album like the one we got in 2020 with all its glorious textures without making Oh Mercy first back in 1989. On its own, this is a truly stunning record, full of innovative production and excellent songwriting. But what it does outside of that also makes the record an important one for Dylan too. Everything was broken, but from here on out, Dylan would start to fix it.